This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
This week on the Weekly Hotwire, I'm joined by Dare Industry New Zealand CEO Rhys Griffiths for a state of the industry look at where the dare sector sits today. From strengthening venison returns and the outlook for velvet to markets, herd numbers, and the opportunities ahead. G'day, Rhys. Thanks for joining me and welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Gus. It's always a pleasure to have a chat with you. So thanks very much for the invite to come back on.
Rhys, if we take a genuine state of the industry view, where does the New Zealand deer sector sit today? Are farmers feeling more confident about the future than they were when we last caught up 12 months or so ago?
Yeah, look, that's a good question, Gus. It's a bit like a game of footy, I guess. There's a couple of halves or a couple of teams that play here. The last 18 months or 12 to 18 months has not really been that great for our velvet producers. But I guess the key factor there is really the fact that we kind of know why that is. That is around kind of supply chain disruption and producing probably a little bit too much of one particular type of product. The positive, I guess, on that side of things is that the markets have really held. So that's the retail or the consumer markets have held, although we've seen that kind of wholesale market stutter a little bit. So we know that, say, in South Korea, a major consumer of New Zealand velvet, that people, consumers have been paying the same price and demanding the same, if not more, velvet product. But the issue there is really someone else trapping our hard-earned margin. And so we can touch maybe a bit more on that a bit later. On the venison front, the industry is in a much better place than we were, say, 12 to 18 months ago. Stronger venison returns, improving confidence in the outlook. And there's actually some evidence, Gus, of a correction in the herd decline. So I guess the biggest difference over the last 18 or so months is that venison profitability. Schedules are actually sitting at historically strong levels. Demand is robust, and we like to use the three-legged tool, I guess, Europe, North America, and also in China. Reports are that China, venison into China is still holding pretty strong, and I guess we're starting to see some of the returns that are allowing our farmers to reinvest in their businesses rather than simply managing costs. Of course, we need to acknowledge that the whole red meat sector is performing really well, and so there are competing proteins that farms get to choose on farms. So that's something I want to acknowledge. But what's particularly encouraging beyond that for venison is the industry is starting to benefit from a much broader customer base than it did a decade ago, especially through our programs in the North American retail side of things. We are starting to see some renewed confidence on the farm. The latest herd stats that we're getting out of MPI and what have you is that hind mating numbers have really increased for the first time in 6 years. So that's positive.
Yeah, that is good.
It starts suggesting that long running herd decline may be starting to stabilise a bit. It is early days, Gus, and I just do want to underpin that. I'll be happier once this trend starts to solidify.
So what is really driving that demand on the venison side? You've touched on the work that's been happening in the various markets in terms of developing, I guess, new markets and developing new areas. Is that mainly driving the growth, or is supply and demand within your normal markets having an impact?
Again, another good question. And again, I just do want to acknowledge the general state of that kind of whole red meat protein sector. It's been very, very buoyant out there. And we are definitely benefiting from that. The real opportunity is going to come when for the deer industry when we go beyond that cycle. At some stage, the beef herds in the US will rebuild. And so that's the kind of the question is whether or not we're still strong going forward. And that's where our focus is today, and that's where differentiation becomes crucial. When we look at what we're doing out there, we look at, I guess, our over-reliance back in the day, Gus, and you and I have talked about this on that food service side of things.
Yes.
We're really around when COVID hit and all the restaurants shut down overnight. So that North American Retail Accelerator Program, and a big thanks to for us assistance there, has paid off. But for us now, what is next? And we're kind of starting, and we're not really wanting to be out there competing with other red meats. We do want New Zealand farm-raised venison to be seen as a premium protein that consumers start actively seeking out because of its attributes. And I think one of the things we do forget as a country is that New Zealand is the only country that farms venison on the commercial scale that we do. And so it often unique on that kind of on that world stage. And heck, Gus, when you kind of look at the global trends at the moment, we're starting to see a real shift towards health and wellness. And it's been aided by growing interest in that kind of weight management, GLP-1s, medication and what have you. So I think we're really well poised to kind of capitalize on that. You know, New Zealand venison is naturally lean, nutrient dense, high in protein. Really starts to suit that trend towards smaller, more purposeful portion sizes. Of course, we'll say this, but we think that venison is one of the best protein sources available anywhere in the world.
Are we seeing a fundamental change in where venison sits with consumers? Demand for premium protein is growing, and I can't see that slowing down anytime soon. All that work you've been doing, are we seeing a shift away from historically venison being seen as a relatively niche product and becoming more of a mainstream, widely available product?
Yeah, I mean, we do need to put this in perspective, Gus. We are still a niche protein on the global context
Yes,
and the
sure.
global stage, but I do think we're starting to see something bigger. And I'm not talking about in terms of volume and size, but we are starting to see something bigger. And I touched on that kind of health and wellness and minimally processed foods, and all of these things really start playing directly into venison's strength. So. We are starting to see some evidence in consumers responding, and certainly at Dairy Industry New Zealand, we're starting to look to accelerate and working with exporters, accelerate that kind of trend and where venison's place may fit. Where we do have a really strong presence in that North America retail and also into the European food service, we're starting to see some good connection with our consumers and we're starting to see some encouraging growth. I guess for us, it's about for us, working with our exporters, it's about building consumer awareness and telling our story into the market. We are looking to probably spend a bit of money into research, into kind of really getting some more compelling research in around the density of New Zealand farm-raised venison and where that could sit. And I think we'll start seeing an evolutionary shift in consumer perceptions on it. So we've still got a lot of work to do there before we hit that kind of mainstream, as you say. But I guess we shouldn't be afraid of the word using the word niche at all. It really comes down to how we can portray that to consumers to understand our value proposition and try and encourage, more profit, more higher prices to be paid and make sure that's resilient and coming back to our farmers. So that's kind of where I see things. The opportunity for venison is really to become a premium protein that people are searching out because of its health and wellness credentials. And I think we're starting to make progress for that. And I guess watch this space over the next 12 to 18 months, Gus. We've got some pretty good plans in place to start capitalizing on that.
I think you're right. I think our red meat sector in general should be aiming towards being in total a niche product. I mean, we can only feed 40 odd million people, and we should be aiming to target the top tier of the 40 million people in the world, just given how efficient our food and grass-fed systems are here. And certainly venison fits within that, right?
100%. I love kind of hearing from some of the multi-protein marketers, I guess, out there and their use and their fit of venison in with their product offerings out there. And I kind of touched on the fact that we are unique on the global stage. So this, New Zealand farm-raised venison alongside other awesome red meat proteins out there, they can really kind of complement each other. And we've got these, we've got, three pretty awesome venison-focused companies that really do focus on that and to focus their kind of work into the markets in the US and Europe as well, and are great at telling those stories. So I think we are really well placed. As you say, we can only feed 40 or 50 million people. Let's just make that count and deliver higher value back to our New Zealand farmers.
And it's so pleasing to hear that the herd has stabilised or perhaps starting to grow. Is that number of 712,000, give or take, sort of roughly where it's sitting at the moment?
Yeah, look, yes, I've got to say it is early days, but
yep.
You are right. The industry does need a rebuild, but we need to make sure we're doing that rebuild in the correct manner. So the objective isn't simply more deer out there. It's about having enough supply to support a growing demand, particularly in those premium markets that we've just talked about, without losing the value gains that we've worked really hard to achieve. So it's about finding that kind of sweet spot. We're wanting to increase demand. We need to increase supply and alongside that, so we don't lose that momentum. But again, if we get out of kilter with that, then we can start seeing the prices being affected. But when we look at the figures, certainly that are coming out of MPI and Stats NZ, it does appear that their herd decline that we've seen over many years has stopped. We are starting to see those hind mating numbers increasing for their first time in 6 years, as I've touched on. And we are starting to see some kind of farmer confidence returning in that venison sector. We will need more deer over time. Our modelling and our ambition, of course, are double exports. And this isn't just carrying out the government mantra here, but we firmly believe that we could be in a good position. And we've seen that in the velvet sector historically, that we can see some real growth in that. And coming back to the venison side of things, if we are looking to double our exports over the next 8 years now, I guess, 2034, 2035, We think we'll need a herd, based on our modelling, we think we'll need a herd of around a million animals. So that feels like a sensible target over that long term. It's not because we're chasing volume, but we've got to make sure we've got product coming through as we look to grow that demand.
And, of course, we need farm gate returns to be high for farmers to stay in the game. And, it's that reinvestment. And typically we see whether it's deer, whether it's sheep, beef, whatever it is, dairy, probably to a lesser extent, but chasing markets, the prices are all exciting. People get fired up. They get into it. We have a dip in price. People start exiting. We're seeing it. So we sort of need everybody to just sort of calm the farm and just stick with it and trust that industry and the market will win in the long run.
That's right. It's about having that confidence in the long term. And as I say, when you look at us globally positioned with a unique product offering on that world stage, it's a pretty exciting position to be in, and certainly certainly this kind of change in consumer sentiment towards health and wellness and where New Zealand farm-raised venison can be. We have an awesome new markets manager. He coins the phrase venison as medicine. I guess that's taking a little leaf out of the historical successes. The last couple of years have been a bit rough in that velvet market, but the historical successes that we've had in that kind of medicine side of things, it kind of runs in parallel when you're kind of thinking about the new attitudes towards GLP-1s or myosin inhibitors or these kind of new things that consumers are really starting to seek out as they're looking to reduce fat, increase muscle. I mean, gee, venison's got a good part to play in that, and we need to invest in the long-term side of things. So as I say, watch the space a bit for where things are going to be over the next year or so.
Yeah, for sure. Now, velvet's been a bit of a different story. Prices haven't been knocking anyone's socks off, have they? And we've seen, and from what I can gather, a lot of older, heavier stags have been culled. How's all that sort of shaking down now, do you think?
Yeah, look, there's no sugarcoating it. The last year or so has been really disappointing in terms of prices coming back to our farmers. And I touched on it at the opening. We're not seeing this at the retail market. We are seeing demand hold up. In fact, a couple of customers have even said that their sales increased to consumers and prices have remained the same. So it is around that supply chain discipline. Arguably, we're producing too much of that larger Korean grade that was going through a commodity channel. So when we see product going directly into the market, those prices seem to have held. And gee, your listeners who understand what buttons mean, the prices being touted at this part of the season this year are pretty promising out there. So it's about kind of getting that market, supply chain discipline right. We have seen a correction in terms of We will see a correction. We've seen an additional 20,000 heavier velveting stags off to the works because of the low prices that happened last year. Our estimations are we will be down about 20% in terms of production or velvet supply going through over this year. I don't like us shrinking ourselves back down into success. And Gus, if we go back a number of years ago, people used to say if we produce over 500 tons, the market crashes. Well, for me, that's a commodity talk. And I was proud when we got over 1,000 tons. But yeah, we were knocking on 1,200 tons over this last season. Our budget will be based on just a bit shy of 1,000 tons. And I think that provides us an opportunity to reset things. But look, when we look at that market and we look at the fundamentals of what's going on in the market, we're seeing a suite of new health functional food products being launched in South Korea within the last couple of months. Now, to get a health functional food claim, you need to have undergone human clinical studies, and it needs to be approved by the Ministry for Food and Drug Safety in South Korea. And so this is the type of stuff that we can look to reset it ourselves now that the production has decreased to just under 1,000 tons, and to start targeting those new markets and where further markets can happen. You would have seen over the last couple of months, last couple of weeks actually, that Vietnam access for us has opened up. And again, a big shout out to MPI Minister McClay and what have you for negotiating that. There's been a relatively quick turnaround. That odds offers us another market, which we desperately need after being so focused on China really as a number one importer, but South Korea is a number one consumer. Opening up Vietnam, and if we can start targeting the food companies in that market in the same way we've been doing it in South Korea, that's going to get us into that more value side of things. So I think we will see a bit of a change. Prices have to improve for farmers over the next year or so. Otherwise, again, we will lose that confidence. It hasn't been great over the last little while, but I do expect that things will start to turn a corner with probably lower inventory being reported coming through. Pretty much most of the product was shifted out of New Zealand. And as long as that messaging back to the big commodity traders up in our current markets, that there will be less volume coming through, I think we'll start seeing a bit of a change for this coming season. But look, it's still too early to tell where prices will be. But I guess my shout out to farmers, to producers that are listening to this, keep in mind with where production is going to be for this coming season, and just make sure you're keeping really, really close to the buyers and marketers that we've got out there. We've got some awesome people doing some awesome work. Just keep close to them, and I think supply side looks a lot different, quite a bit different from where we were 12 months ago.
Now, around four out of five deer farmers, as you know, run other livestock. So deer, you could argue, is competing for land and capital against sheep, beef, and increasingly strong alternative returns. What is the case for keeping deer in that mixed farming system today, and where does deer have an advantage?
Yeah, look, great question, Gus. For us, diversification is key, right? Whether that's diversifying our markets, and I've just talked about kind of opening up other markets in both that venison and that velvet side of things. But actually on the farm, diversification is key, and it's nice that we've got this industry that enables us to be able to farm say venison and velvet alongside other dry stock or other farming systems that are out there. I mean, deer have already proven their value in mixed farming systems. Profitability is part of that story, but diversification is really the key here to make sure there's resilience kind of going forward. Kind of when we look at what's been contributing on a per hectare basis, many farmers have seen that kind of that whole farm productivity benefit by carrying some venison hinds and possibly some velvet stags as well. One of the biggest advantages is that diversification that we've touched on. So when one sector, I guess, is under pressure, that another can help steady that ship within a farming enterprise out there. When we kind of look at those mixed species systems, you've got pasture management, you've got animal health. So there are real complementary kind of systems in between running deer and say sheep and beef. From a labor perspective as well, venison systems are relatively lower input than potentially some of the other things out there as well. So and often timings can kind of complement each other within that kind of sheep and beef side of things. So I do think, I do think it is complementary, and that's certainly our message out there to sheep and beef farmers. I think in our latest survey we did, Gus, I think we had something like 77% or 80% of our deer farmers also farm other species out there. When you talk to those operators, they do talk to the advantage of that mixed species system overall. So look, I think deer are also particularly well positioned, and I've kind of talked a little bit about what where our initiatives are going to be going to that kind of science focused area over the next year or so, and where our venison might hopefully complement some of the other red meat side of things. This protein shortage won't last forever on a global stage, so having multiple products offered from your farming system should be of benefit, and certainly where we're going, that premiumisation of venison as well, Gus.
Looking forward, Rhys, in terms of gains, where do you see the biggest gains coming from in the next, wee while, 5 or 10 years? Is it genetics, animal health, farm systems, or is it developing greater value from the products themselves, or is it a mix of all those things, perhaps?
Yeah, look, Gus, I think your last bit nailed it on the head. All of those areas really matter. Really, the biggest gains will come from how they can all kind of work in together. If I've got to kind of pick one area with the greatest kind of potential for transformation around the industry returns over the next decade, it would be really about creating more value from the products that we already produce. So again, for us, I kind of talked about that's, over the next 10 years or whatever, if we can build up the herd size up towards 1 million deer, but double our exports, obviously that's a value play because we're talking about doubling exports and increasing by another 30% in terms of volume. So there's no really silver bullet. Genetics, animal health, farm system performance, and environmental management will all contribute to productivity and profitability. The gains will become quite cumulative. And that's where we'll make a real difference out there. We are seeing some exciting developments under the Deer Select program. And there is animal health research underway that farmers can be particularly interested in as we start kind of unlocking those and getting those kind of out and about as well. So again, it's about producing more from the similar type of resources that we've got on farm. If we can really increase the value in the products that we're selling, the benefits should flow all the way back to the farm gate. And as I've touched on, it is going to be coming back to the market side of things around promoting those kind of health benefits going forward.
When we look internationally, overseas at the moment, there's a lot of discussion around trade barriers. There's geopolitical instability. There's been disruption to shipping. How much of that is playing a role, do you think, currently, or perhaps might play a role in the future? Obviously, we're talking at the moment about a shortage of protein, but if for some reason that spins the other way and we have an oversupply of protein, how does all that stuff play out for us back home?
Yeah, good question. Actually, Gus, at our conference this year, we had Tim Grosser speak up there, and he was kind of reflecting on New Zealand as a far distance market, relying on supplying food to the world. And I mean, I still remember something resonating from the opening of his speech in and around that. And look, when I kind of reflect, we are operating in an increasing uncertain world. But we kind of have done right all the way through when we think back to the lifting of our supplementary minimum prices back in the day, and we had to kind of correct ourselves and become more efficient at farming. So this trade uncertainty out there, it's not unique to the deer industry, and even to New Zealand agriculture, is kind of where we play, and we're pretty good at playing in that space. And I do think that we, particularly as a deer industry, are well positioned to kind of manage it. I'd say that we're more resilient. Actually, Tim Grosser talked about our resilience, ability to kind of respond. There is no doubt that the global trading environment has become more complicated. Geopolitics, market in, or non-tariff barriers, and what have you out there. These are things that we're playing, that we're working with more and more. And a lot of these things are really outside of our control. So we do have to focus on what we can control, and in some places not get too bound up by what's going on that stage, not knowing that We've had to work our way through some pretty big trials and tribulations as a country that relies so heavily on exporting, in that food and fibre sector. We've done a fantastic job over the last few years. There's no doubt about it. By successive governments here, Gus, in terms of securing free trade agreements, we've had a real focus on that. And I think it's been an enormous benefit to the dairy industry, but also to our friends in other industries in the food and fibre sector. So I talked about what we can control, and I think back to the COVID stuff, and we talked on that. And I remember in 2019 looking at the exports of venison, particularly into the US. I kind of think, what could go wrong here? And then the restaurants being shut down overnight. So what we can control, we developed a program called the North American Retail Accelerator Program. We're now into that kind of retail market that's paying some really good dividends in terms of far exceeding where our plans were gonna be, and that's the hard work that the five exporting companies are kind of doing on that. So for us, it's that balance on that global uncertainty in trade and what we can control and how we can work to try and build resilience within our farming sector. We've got more work to do there, Gus. But again, we've got to not get too caught up on the global uncertainties out there that lie outside of control, and just really be focused on what we can do and what matters and how we can differentiate ourselves on that global market.
Fantastic, Bruce. I always enjoy catching up with you. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Yeah, no worries at all, Gus. Anytime, mate. Thank you.
That was Rhys Griffiths, CEO of Deere Industry New Zealand. Some encouraging signs for the sector, particularly around venison demand and confidence returning on farm, alongside some real opportunities to build greater value from both venison and velvet. Thank you all for listening, and I'll catch you again next week on the Weekly Hot Wire.
This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.